Hi, everyone. It's been a while since I've chatted with you all in this way, so I hope you're all doing well, and I just want to say thank you so much for continuing to tune into my podcast and now YouTube channel. A bit of an update on what's going on. If you've been listening, the format has been changing, and the interviews are now available on YouTube. Expanding into YouTube has been a lot of fun. Running a podcast and a YouTube channel has provided me a place to exercise my creative muscles. So we are working on new formats and styles in our interviews, and the new videos will be out on Tuesday, November 9th. So please mark your calendars and, of course, smash that like button. Something else I've been working on is a website. On this website, I will share tips on personal finance, organizing, and productivity. A lot of us are stuck in the weeds, overrun by our finances or in the routine of our chores. So on the website, there are some tips to help you manage and get control of the quote-unquote small things so you can live in the big things. I don't want us to be bogged down by all the administrative tasks in life. That's not how life was meant to be lived. What I wish for everyone, including myself, is to live fully, to explore and actively engage in the adventures of life. Life is full of mystery and wonder. And life is also really hard, but I do believe we can become stronger and continually learn to live. I hope Be in the Know can be a place where we can encourage each other to thrive. The first tip on the website is about living debt-free. So this week, we will be bringing back an oldie but a goodie from season one with my good friend Penelope. She lives in New York, one of the most expensive cities, and managed to pay off $28,000 in debt in 7 months. I believe being debt-free and having an emergency fund can relieve so much stress and give us more space to breathe. So please enjoy this episode and check out our new website at beinthenunk.com. Thanks.
I just had so much credit card debt, and it was just looming over me. And it was getting to a point where I was literally getting anxiety when I would open up like the app.
Thanks for being on the podcast. I'm super excited about this. I want to start with your background and just where you're from and just take us back to when you were a kid.
Thanks for having me on here.
It's so weird. So, it's like so professional.
It is. Thank you for having me. So I was born and raised in Queens. My mother, she's Dominican. I was born and raised in Queens. I just said that. Mm-hmm. And she was a single mom. So my sister and me, we were raised, you know, by my single mother. So she was the sole income earner of our household. And I feel like in a way I was fortunate to be raised by a single parent, mm-hmm. because I feel like I got to see and I learned a lot of things about finances that I probably wouldn't have seen if my parents, you know, they never got divorced. So I saw my mom budgeting a lot because, as you can imagine, being a single mother, you know, it's one income versus two. So I saw her budgeting a lot. You know, I always saw her paying bills. And I learned early on about purchases that were necessary and purchases that were more frivolous.
What fell into those categories?
Say that again.
What fell into those categories?
Necessary food, clothing, you know, bills, everything that we needed. And then frivolous things were more so like extra pairs of shoes or like the really fancy name brand shoes. Mm. And even like grocery shopping, like specific brands of groceries. We kind of always got like the generic brand and saved money on that. So I learned from her. Mm-hmm. And then also I was raised as a Christian. So she also taught me a lot about tithing. Mm. So even as a child, anything that I would get, any Christmas gifts or birthday gifts that I would get as, you know, cash gifts, she taught me early on, okay, 10%, it goes to the church, no matter if I got $20 or whatever it was. Wow. She taught me. So I learned that concept very early on. And she taught me to save. She never told me a specific amount, but she said 10% goes to the church. You save a portion and then the rest you get to keep. Mm-hmm. So I carried that on with me my entire life.
What was the impression that you had of your mom, like watching her budget or save? Like, did you think this was normal or did you feel a constraint?
No, I absolutely thought it was normal because it was all that I knew. It was all that I saw. So I always thought everyone else also got to see this. But mm-hmm. as I got older, I realized, oh, wow, like this wasn't the norm. And this wasn't what everyone saw in their household.
Right. So what was growing up like for you with a single mom and who budgeted? Like, can you describe what that was like?
I mean, I feel like we never struggled. Mm. So although she was a single mom, we always had a roof over our heads. We always had food on the table.
Wow.
We were fortunate enough to have never struggled or never, from my knowledge, have to ask other, you know, people for help. But again, it was just her laying those like financial foundation principles on me and my sister, mm-hmm. You know, learning how to handle our money, mm-hmm. which I'm saying I learned very young, but kind of went out the window as soon as I turned 18.
Okay. Well, what were you like as a kid? And then what were you like when you turned 18? What was young Penelope like? For some reason, I have a feeling that you're not much different, but I'm sure you were.
I wasn't much different at all. Oh my goodness. Now?
What? No, because you're just so, you're so bubbly and this childlike to you in mm-hmm. a good way. It's like just like the sweet bubbliness to you, and I'm just like, I feel like you were like that as a kid too.
my whole life. It's funny because my mom would say, like, so I was always the smallest mm-hmm. in every grade. So I remember her telling me a story of how in pre-K kids used to fight over me to like put my jacket on because I was just so small. So like in their eyes, I was like a doll. Mm. So they were like fight to do that. But no, I feel like I've had the same personality, you know, cheerful, always wanting to help others. Much hasn't really changed when it comes to my personality. And my core characteristics.
Did you guys grow up around people who were in a similar situation as you guys, like single mothers, or like were you one of the only few families that had a single parent in the house? What was the environment like?
So that's why I said this was the norm for me, because a lot of women in my family were single mothers. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I feel like that's all that I knew. Mm-hmm. And because that's all I saw, like my aunt, my grandmother, like almost every woman in my immediate family was a single mother. And they're all very strong, resilient women. Mm-hmm. So like, I saw that from them.
Right. How did that shape you as a woman now, looking back? Kind of now, maybe looking back, you must have a different point of view on things.
I am definitely a go-getter. And I feel like it's because in my life, I always saw my mom as the head of the house. It was always what she, you know, said went in terms of finances and obviously in other things as well. So it shaped me to have that same mindset, which can be good and bad in some instances, especially because I'm married now.
Right. What are some of the good and bad ways that it benefits you or doesn't benefit you?
So the good ways is that if I have a goal, I am persistent to reach it. And I don't let anything really get in my way. And I like to have control of things, which can be bad, especially in a marriage, because marriage is all about compromising. So I had to learn that I wasn't the head of the household. Like I saw my mom being the head of a household. I now have to share that responsibility with another person. And I have to take that person's ideas and wishes into consideration. And we need to come to an agreement together. We make decisions together. I wasn't the only decision maker.
How did you, I mean, I'm sure that's a learning process, but how has that transition been?
It's been, in the beginning, it was a little rough. I had to learn to kind of like go and step back. It was really, it was hard. I'm not even going to lie. It was hard because, like I said, that's all I ever knew. And it's funny because Chris was the one that pointed that out to me. I didn't realize that. So he pointed it out. I think I like to have control of certain things. So he pointed out, I think it's because that's all you saw. Like, you know, you saw your mom. And I started thinking about, oh my goodness, you are absolutely right. So when he made that observation, that's when I had to kind of step back and take a look and analyze and say, oh my goodness, I need to be more considerate. This is a completely different dynamic than what I grew up with and what I was used to.
Right.
So it's going to take work. It's still a work in progress, but I feel like I've gotten much better letting go of certain things and realizing that I can't, it's not just what I want or what I need. It's both of us.
What does it feel like to share the responsibility or to give up control?
It like I said, it was tough in the beginning. I still struggle a little bit, but it feels good to have that other kind of head to collaborate with. And it feels good to have a partner in all of this. So I'm very grateful for that, to have just someone, you know, where we can discuss things together, have these great discussions and collaborations about our lives and everything we want to do. So it feels good to have someone to go through this with.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's go back just a little bit, because I want to go back to when you turned 18 and what happened then.
Lord.
Well, because you pointed out, you said something happened at 18. What happened at 18? You went to college and you were what?
Yes. So I turned 18. So I was saying I turned 18 and basically everything that I learned kind of just went out the window.
Financially,
yes. Temporarily, though. Okay. I bounced back 10 years, maybe 12 years later, but I bounced back.
Okay. So what happened at 18 then? Like when you said you let go, like what did that look like?
I got my first credit card at 18. You know, they send you, these people know when you turn 18, they know exactly what they're doing. They send you the invitations to open up a credit card. In my mind, I was like, okay, sure. I ran it by my mom. I was still living with my mom. And she's like, you can do it, but you know, you have to have control of it. You can't go crazy. I completely disregarded what she said. I maxed out my first credit card in a few months. My limit, I remember, was $800.
Ooh.
And I maxed it out. So I paid it off. I had a little job at the time and I was able to pay it off, but it wasn't long until I was in the same predicament again. And the next time was even more money because, you know, the more you spend on a card, the more they increase your limit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So now that 800 turned into 2000. Mm-hmm. And then I did the same thing again, maxed it out. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of became that vicious cycle. And I always had a balance on my credit cards, thousands of dollars.
Mm, wow.
So that's where it kind of went left a little bit.
Right. What were you spending your money on?
What was I not spending my money on? Everything. So gifts, that's my love language is gifting.
Mm-hmm.
I love to give people gifts. So I remember that first credit card, I maxed it out shopping for Christmas for other people.
I never got a Christmas gift from you.
Well, girl. Oops. This was when I was in City College. Remember, oh, I went to City College first.
Why don't I remember that?
I don't know.
Oh, you went from City College to Brooklyn College sophomore year, in your junior year?
Sophomore year.
Sophomore year? Wait, I like remember this in cheerleading terms. So that was what, three-peat? Were you around for three-peat?
No. So I got there for just five.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we only cheered together 1 year.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So, so I would buy, you know, gifts. Mm-hmm. I buy myself things as well. Food, anything you can name, I was swiping. Mm. Pretty much everything.
Wow. So then, okay. So this is college now that you're spending. And so I just want to give people a little bit of a background. So are you commuting from Queens to Brooklyn?
Yes. So for college, I was commuting. Mm-hmm. Yes. Public transportation. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So just kind of like spending money on normal things like going out to eat, hanging out with friends, buying gifts for some of your friends.
you're gonna get me for that now forever.
It's all good. And then you graduated college. What happened when you graduated college? Like what was going on in your life more specifically, I guess?
More specifically, I graduated and then I got into my first career job that was a salary, mm. You know, because I was used to just getting paid by the hour.
Right.
So after college, I got my first salary job.
I was really excited. Yeah.
It was amazing. I remember I was so excited. I got my first paycheck. I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. But still nothing much has changed. I still had these same spending habits.
Mm-hmm.
So more money was coming in, but more money was going out.
So your credit card limit was increasing and so was your spending increasing along with it.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. So like I said, it was just a cycle. So I would get more money and then I would spend more and then my credit would increase and I would have more of a limit.
Mm-hmm.
So my spending habits didn't really change as much, even though my income did.
Right. Well, what were you spending money on? Like, where was it bigger items, like bigger expenses? Like what were you spending your money on at that time?
Well, I worked on 80th Street in the city, uh-oh, right next to all of the shopping stores. So when I would take the train, H&M is literally right near the train. So I would walk to the train from work, get paid on a Friday. I'd be like, I think I need something new going to H&M. So during those years, it was clothes a lot. Yes. And I, in the back of my mind, I knew I didn't need it. I knew I didn't need this, you know, 10th pair of boots or whatever. But I still went in. I don't know what it was. I couldn't stop it. But like in the back of my mind, I'm like, you don't need this, girl. Yeah.
Were you living with your mom at that time?
Yes.
Did she say anything ever about your spending habits?
Oh, absolutely. She would literally tell me to my face, you bought another pair of shoes. You bought another jacket. You don't need this. You know better. And I did. I did know better. But I was young. I think I just got too caught up in my first salary job. I knew that I was living with my mom. I wasn't contributing at the time. I was how old? I must have been 22 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 22. So, you know, I didn't really, that money was for me. I only had a phone bill to pay and my credit card, which I was only paying the minimum on every month. Mm-hmm. So I saw all of this extra money as money for me to do whatever I want. And in my head, I was saying, well, you know, I'm still giving my 10% to the church and, you know, I'm still saving a little bit. So the rest is for me and I can spend it on whatever I want.
Right.
So it was kind of, I still was following, you know, everything that my mom taught me, but I wasn't doing it in a way that was obviously beneficial really for me.
Right. I see. So you were meaning following what your mom was saying, as in like tithe, save a little bit, but you weren't really, but you were digging yourself into a hole.
Yes. A huge hole.
What was one of the biggest items you purchased during that time? Maybe it was a trip or a car. I don't know.
Biggest item that I put it on a credit card or just like I
just biggest purchase.
I would have to say the trip that I took to go see you.
Oh no.
In LA. However,
that was a trip.
It was.
That was so much fun.
It was the best trip.
Yeah.
It really was. It was my first solo trip to an independent trip.
I remember that. Because I remember you're like waiting for people to join you and you're like, forget it. I'm just going to go because it was taking too much to coordinate and waiting. And you're like, I'm never going to go. So I'm just going to go by myself.
Yeah. Yes. And that everyone time was saying, oh, yes, count me in.
Yeah. And then Dom ended up being out there and then Tanya came out too. So it ended up being like a few people, like halfway through the trip, like few people came on board. Yeah.
Yes. That was an awesome trip that I do not regret. But I think that was my first, because that was my first solo trip. It was my biggest purchase. I somewhat budgeted for that trip though. But still, it was my biggest purchase.
What do you mean you budgeted for that trip?
So I was being intentional about saving because I knew I wanted to go to LA. So I saved for some things, like for food and like spending money over there. But then like the flight, I was like, oh, I'm just putting the flight on my credit card and I'll just budget for food and anything that I want to buy over there. So again, having just that murky financial mentality.
So when did things change for you then?
So they changed when I got married. So a year ago.
What happened?
So we got married and, you know, we sat down.
Sorry.
Yes.
Start interrupt because I feel like it changed before you got married.
You think so?
Well, because you, okay, I don't know how much of this played into it, but like the way you paid for your wedding and
yes,
like you're right. Very thrifty about that. Was that part of a whole plan or was that just you being thrifty?
So it wasn't part of a plan. It was, okay, so let's take a step back. For planning the wedding, I was still in a lot of debt. However, I knew that I didn't want to get more in debt with the wedding. Mm. So that's why, you know, I moved back in with my mom to save money to plan the wedding. And we were able to, you know, pay for our whole wedding in cash.
Right. So do you mind sharing how much in debt you were at that point before your wedding?
Before our wedding, I was about maybe 15,000 in debt. Yes. Mm-hmm. It might have been a little more. Because our whole debt amount is both of our debts combined, which was 28,000.
Okay. So you and your debt and Chris's debt combined, once you got married, it was 28,000.
Yes.
And then getting married, you didn't want to add to that. So right. what did you guys do? Cause it, I know, you know, some of the things you did for your wedding. How did you guys like, because you guys had a beautiful wedding, like gorgeous
Thank
wedding.
You.
Williamsburg. And if anyone knows, Williamsburg is it's expensive and had this like city view with an outdoor patio, like indoor outdoor thing. I mean, how did you guys do it? What did you guys do?
Oh my goodness. The first thing, so I went on The Knot. So it's a website where you can find different vendors. And I immediately set the filter to inexpensive. So I looked at everything that had only $1 sign. Mm-hmm. So if it had $2, we would not even consider it. We wanted to have, you know, the least expensive things, obviously still have a beautiful wedding. So a lot of tricks that we learned throughout the wedding planning journey. I'll give you a quick example with the cake. We saved hundreds just by not telling them that it was for a wedding. Oh, can you believe that?
Wow.
Yes. Because places, so like bakers and florists, they tend to overcharge when they know it's for a wedding. Mm. So yes, I remember I had requested a quote for our cake and they quoted us at like $700, $800 for a cake. And I told them it was for a wedding. A couple weeks later, I requested the same cake, but I told them it was for an all-white soiree, and it was $400.
Wow.
So I was like, oh my goodness. And I learned that just like going through like some forums, because I was part of like the Wedding Bees, and you like talk to different brides, and it was like a trick that I learned, and I'm like, oh my goodness. So we did that. We tried to find, you know, little ways to save money here and there. Of course, you know, living with my mom was a huge way to save because I no longer was paying rent.
Did you feel weird did you feel weird as an adult moving back in with your mom?
I did. I felt, you know, a little ashamed, but I knew that it was going to be temporary. So I really try not to focus on that. And I knew that it was going to benefit, you know, us in the long run. Mm-hmm. I knew we were going to get married the following year. We didn't, you know, we didn't want to have a long engagement. So I just kept telling myself, this is literally only going to be for a year or less than a year. So I was fortunate enough to have that option because not everyone has the option of moving back in with their parents to save money. Right. So I really was grateful for that.
Hmm.
But yeah, and other things for the wedding, like my dress, I remember I got it hugely discounted. I waited for the dresses for the next season to come out because the dresses from the previous season are going to be on sale. So I saved, you won't even believe how much my wedding dress was.
How much was your wedding dress?
It was under $1,000.
What?
Yeah. It was $900. And that dress prior, it was a $6,000 dress.
And just was because insane. it was considered an old season, quote unquote old season, it was then reduced by $5,000?
Hugely reduced. Wow. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, we tried to do little things here and there. And I think our biggest saver for the wedding was not going with the traditional venue. Mm. It was definitely more work on our part because we had to find our own vendors. But, you know, getting married in a traditional venue, you have to pay per person per plate. And right. Usually there's like a venue fee. So we found a loft that we were able to rent out. Mm-hmm. By the hour, and it ended up costing just a couple $1,000s. Mm-hmm. And we also did it on a Sunday because Sundays and Fridays tend to be so much cheaper than having a wedding on a Saturday.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So we saved. So that venue cost us $3,000 to rent it for the 12 hours.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible.
Yes. So we saved here and it adds up.
Yeah.
Definitely. It adds up.
So what was the total cost of your wedding?
Our wedding cost roughly $22,000.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a little over 20. Our budget was 20.
Mm.
But we went a little over. Mm. We didn't account for little things that ended up adding up.
What were some of those little things?
Gifts for our bridesmaids and groomsmen, gifts for our parents, and then favors.
Right.
So we didn't really think about that when we did the budget. We just thought of like the big, like photography, you know, venue, food.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's another place where we saved too. We didn't go with traditional caterers.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up saving a huge amount with food.
Yeah.
Which
the food was really good.
Everyone complimented us on the food and we still get food from them. They sometimes, they were awesome caterers.
Yeah. No, they were really good. Great. So how many people were on your guest list?
We had 110 people on the guest list, but I think only like about 105 showed up.
That's not bad though. I mean, 100 mm-hmm. people wedding, Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Am I saying that right? Williamsburg. Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and $22,000. I mean, that's still a significant chunk of change, but considering what, you know, the average, you know, what people spend on average for weddings. I mean, that's amazing.
Yes. Because even if you just do a quick Google search, what is the average amount that someone spends on a wedding?
Let's Google it right
now. It must be like, Google it. Cause I feel like it's like 50,000 or 40,000, something.
Average cost of wedding in New York City. Let's see. $65,824.
Look at that. And we were way below the average.
Wow. New York City. Okay. So this is from CNN.com. New York City weddings cost $77,000 on average.
Not ours.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So we did pretty good with the wedding. So we knew we didn't want, so our thing that whole year that we were planning the wedding, we were telling ourselves, if we can't pay it cash, we're not getting it.
Mm.
So that was like our motto the whole year.
Wait, so you paid $22,000 in cash?
Yes.
No credit cards?
Yes, we did. No, we didn't put anything on our credit cards. So it was literally, I was getting paid. My salary for that year was just for the wedding. Mm. Also for my wedding. And then I was the maid of honor to Minnie's wedding.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was a crazy year financially also, because being a maid of honor comes with a lot of financial responsibilities as well.
Right. And Minnie's was a destination wedding.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We did put that trip on our credit cards, though.
Okay.
We did. Because, like I said, it comes with a lot of responsibility. So we tried for our things, we paid cash mostly. Yeah. Yeah.
So how did that conversation start with you and Chris about, you know, even about the wedding? Like, how did you guys agree upon, you know, paying it in cash? Like, was there any pushback from either side? Like, where did that idea even come from? If, like, it just seems like all this time up to, you know, since you're 18 and until your wedding, you're like everything on a credit card, maxing it out. Like, what switched in your brain where you were like, you know what, I don't want to put any of this on a credit card?
The fact that I just had so much credit card debt, and it was just looming over me. And it was getting to a point where I was literally getting anxiety when I would open up like the app, like my Amex app, and see like the amount. And it was like, I couldn't do it anymore. I felt exhausted from constantly running away from this. So I'm like, I don't want to add to this because I'm trying to get this under control.
For what?
So, for what?
Yeah.
Just to have peace of mind. Just to have peace of mind.
So even though you're spending all this money and put on your credit card, you felt a lot of anxiety during that time of your life with your finances?
Not while I was doing it, but it ended up, it caught up to me.
Mm-hmm.
It caught up to me, you know, in my late 20s, I started looking at it like, this isn't cool. This is a lot of money that I've accumulated throughout the years, you know, doing whatever I was doing.
Right.
So I think I mentally just reached a point in my life where I didn't want any more debt. Like, I didn't want that number to get bigger. Right. So I started telling myself, I need this number to start getting lower. And also Chris and I, we attended premarital counseling at our church. And one of the lessons were about finances. So I think that also really, you know, reinforced what we were doing and our thoughts about.
What do they say? What do they say in those classes about finances in regards to marriage?
They say they give you a lot of tips, and you know, obviously, everything stems from the teachings of the Bible. So they obviously teach you, you know, to tithe if you're not tithing already, to merge finances. Husband and wives shouldn't have separate bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
There should be transparency, and it's no longer my money and your money. It's our money.
And it's no longer.
It wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be, like, to merge our finances.
Mm-hmm.
It was more difficult, like I say, like, giving control of like what we want, like what I wanted to do, like letting go of that control. But like merging it, I didn't have an issue with it at all. And then they also said it's no longer your debt, and their debt is your debt together.
Right.
So that's pretty much what they went over. But they really reinforced, you know, everything is together. You're one. So your finances become one as well.
Gotcha. So at that point, then you are, once you've combined your finances, you have $28,000 in debt. No student loan debt for you?
I had, for me or for Chris?
For both of you guys. Was that $15,000 just consumer debt, or did that include your student loan debt as well?
That included student loan as well. Chris had no student loan.
Okay.
So I had a very small student loan amount, though, because I was fortunate enough to get a full scholarship for my master's. So I didn't have to spend that. Yes. So it was $28,000 that include that. It was mostly, honestly, credit card debt, the student loan, and then the car. That's basically what it was. credit cards, student loans, and car card.
Gotcha.
Yes. So it totaled $28,000.
And then you said once you got married, something switched for you guys. Something happened where you decided we need to spend our finances or spend our money differently and plan for our financial future. What happened?
So we already had that mindset of paying cash for the wedding because we did that. Mm-hmm. But we saw that we had all of this debt together. So we started kind of doing a budget. It's definitely not the budget that we are used to doing now. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as detailed, but we knew that we had to set aside money for specific things. So when we sat down the first time to do it, we realized we had like $1,000 going to debt. And it was just insane. And we were like, we have like nothing left over for us. Like, what are we doing? Mm. So we realized that we were like, okay, but we were like, okay, well, we'll pay it off someday. Like it'll get lower. Like if we just keep paying what we need to pay. So we weren't paying the minimum anymore. We said, okay, let's pay a little bit more. But we weren't really intentional about paying a large amount. So we weren't paying the minimum, but we weren't paying a lot either. Right. It was just enough to kind of maybe lower the principal, but not really do too much to help us really get out of debt.
Right. You weren't
prioritizing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, you just weren't prioritizing tackling that debt.
Right. But we were like, let's put a little more than the minimum. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's what it was.
Yeah, it makes you feel better. You're like, okay, yeah, we'll get a little bit more than the minimum requirement.
Exactly. So we were like, you know, we got this.
We're good.
So we're like, damn, we have like nothing left for ourselves. We were like, all right, next. Like we just closed our budgeting book, whatever, and went about our way. Mm. Like it still wasn't clicking that we had to do something about this.
Right.
Like, and we almost kind of like started fantasizing like, oh my gosh, like what would it be like if we didn't have to spend like all this money on debt? Like what would we do with that extra thousand plus, you know, that we were putting to the debt? And it seemed sort of like a far away fantasy and dream. That's like, oh, you know, one day in 10 years when we don't have this debt, we could like think about what to do.
Mm. Did you have an idea of what that could be though? Like what you would spend that $1,000 on?
I thought vacations immediately.
Right.
Pretty much vacations and like a house too. Mm. So I was like, oh my gosh, like we would start saving that money for a house. Mm-hmm. So those were my two biggest things that I was really dreaming about.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, so you're like, okay, we'll do that in like 10 years.
Right.
So then along your merry way.
Yeah, a couple months.
And then what happened?
Couple months. And then I'm telling you, it was like fate. I'm on Pandora and I'm listening to my music and this pop-up comes up, Dave Ramsey podcast. Mm. So I don't know what it was. Something told me to click on it and I clicked on it and I started listening and I'm telling you, he was literally talking to me. And the topic was baby step number two, tackling your debt. And, you know, I'm listening to this and I'm hearing all these people call in and they're doing debt-free screens. And I'm like, what is this? I need to keep listening. And I ended up listening to the whole hour. And then after that, I ended up listening to like three more hours of his things. But, you know, I'm hearing him saying, you need to leave $1,000 in your savings and just take the rest of that money and throw it at your debt. And you need to, you know, you need to do this debt snowball and you need to pay this and that. And I just immediately started researching like Dave Ramsey, baby steps. What is this?
What in that episode did you hear that struck a chord with you?
This woman had called in and she was doing the debt-free scream. And she paid off, I don't remember the amount of debt, but it was a large amount. And she said she paid it off in 4 months. And I'm like, what? And then I remember she was making not a low salary, but it was like a median salary. And I'm like, how the heck did she do that? Making that much money? Right. So I was like, that's impossible. Like how? Mm. So then I was listening to her story and just the things that she was saying, how she was like really intentional and she had to, make certain sacrifices and really just what Dave was saying too kind of stuck with me, rice and beans. And then she was saying that, and I'm like, what, rice and beans? Like, what is this? So I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I almost thought too that it was fake. Because I'm like, there's no way you could pay that amount making that much money. Like the calculations that I was trying to do, it wasn't adding up. Mm. So I'm like, was she not doing anything? Like, was she just home and not going out? And that's exactly what it was. Like, those are the sacrifices that she had to make. So that's when I was intrigued and I'm like, let me do some more research. Let me Google. And oh my gosh, you on YouTube, but just so many people doing the debt-free screams and just reading and listening to their stories. Yeah. It was just so inspiring. And what really stood out was that they weren't making six-figure salaries. Mm-mm. They weren't. Mm-hmm. I was sometimes making more than them from what they were saying. So I really just said to them, like, oh my goodness, we can do this. Mm. I just immediately thought, like, if we get serious about it and do these baby steps that this guy is talking about, like, we can do this. Mm. So that I brought the idea to Chris.
And how did Chris respond to that idea?
Well, I brought it to him like a mad woman first, because I remember he wasn't home. So I had printed out like all the PDFs on Dave Ramsey's website. And like, I did it in colored ink and I was like so excited and I had it. And like, babe, we need to. So we had like a couple thousand in our savings account from the gifts that we received from the wedding. Mm. Right. So I'm like, babe, we need to take $2,000 and pay our debt and just leave $1,000. He's like, what are you talking about? No, like we barely don't even have a savings account. And I'm like, we need to do this. This is what Dave says. Then we need to do the debt snowball. We need to list our debts, this and that. And he's just like, slow down. Like, so I caught my breath. I explained everything to him. I had him like read over everything that I had printed. Mm. And he just said to me, he said, let's do it. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, let's do it. So
it wasn't hard to convince Chris for him to jump on board then.
Not at all. And I'm very blessed. We are very blessed that we had that support from each other immediately and there wasn't a struggle. And we had the same ideas and the same mindset when it came to that. Mm. So we were very blessed in that instance, because I know that finances and marriage could be very tough.
Right.
Because people have different opinions and perspectives on money. Money is a very touchy subject, even when you are married.
So when you guys decided to, be super intentional about your finances and to eliminate this debt, you went from saying, we'll pay this off in 10 years. So let's pay this off like in the next year, few months, whatever it was, right? Were you guys like captivated by some kind of vision, or like what was the goal that you guys had in mind?
So when we sat down to start, you know, listing our debt snowball, we started thinking about, okay, like, why is it that we really want to do this? Yeah. Obviously, no one wants to owe anyone money, mm-hmm. right? That's the first thing. But we really just started thinking about our childhood and our upbringing. Mm-hmm. So Chris grew up, you know, in an apartment. I did too. So we always had this dream of like having a house, a one family house, just a big house. And like, you know, where our kids could go, we have a backyard and we can host barbecues and stuff. We didn't have that. So to us, that was a luxury, you know? So we started thinking about wanting to have that. And also just, we wanted our kids, our future kids, to have some sort of wealth, you know, because that's something that gets inherited sometimes. So we wanted to start laying, you know, the pavement for them. Right. So we wanted to build, right. Mm-hmm. And their children's children. So we wanted to be, you know, the people to start that kind of like, you know, that catalyst for everything. So it was that and a home. So those were really the reasons why, and also, you know, vacationing. That was like at the bottom of the list, but it was there.
Yeah.
It was there. Mm. So those were our whys. And it's really important, you know, when you are trying to get out of debt, to really just analyze what is the reason, the true reason why you want to do it, because that's really going to be your motivator. Mm-hmm. To push through, you know, the bumps, because it's not going to be easy all the time, especially with the sacrifices that you may have to make. Right. So having your reasons as to why, you know, what would you do with that extra money? Mm-hmm. So I think it is really important.
So so what did it look like? What did your lifestyle look like from, okay, we're just going to do our thing, to now we have to cut back and we have to tackle our debt? So, okay, let's even like go back just a little bit. So you decided, let's do this Dave Ramsey plan. And if anyone who is familiar knows the steps, but if you're not familiar, you know, the first step is set aside that $1,000 starter emergency fund. So not your full emergency fund, but your starter emergency fund. Step two is to pay off all your debt, excluding your mortgage, if you have a mortgage. And for step two, to pay off all your debt, and what his baby steps recommend is that you're living on rice and beans and rice, doing nothing. It's like it's a short period of time as possible, but you're going intensely minimizing, you know, your lifestyle or all these additional things, to just literally pour all your money, you know, throw all your money at your debt. So what did your lifestyle look like? How did it change? And what were some of the sacrifices you made during that time?
So some of the sacrifices were really saying no to certain things. Mm. So a lot of the times we had to say no to friends' birthday dinners. Dinners tend to be super expensive. And now, you know, it's two of us, so it could be easily over $200 for a birthday dinner. So saying no to things like that were, you know, some of the biggest changes that we made to our lifestyle. We were no longer eating out, really. We ate out once during our debt snowball, and it was for Chris's. We did. It was for Chris's birthday.
Wow. I ate a few times. I know you're not supposed to, but I did.
You're not supposed. Anyway, but we did.
It's not about me. It's about you.
we did Chris's dinner, but we tried to kind of like budget a little bit for it. We took out of like our grocery envelope. And also at the times we were doing cash envelopes. Mm. So that I'm telling you, that is what really saved us.
The cash envelope?
So cash envelopes is a system that you use to really budget your money and to tell your money where to go. So you would create different categories that your money would go into. So the categories that you create, these are categories that tend to fluctuate every month. So it could be an envelope for groceries. It can be an envelope for gas, for what else? I'm trying to think of what we have. At the time we had for my dog. So just things that tend to fluctuate. Mm-hmm. Everything else, your bills, that doesn't get an envelope. Mm-hmm. So the envelope system really, really helped us because it served as a visual for us to really see where our money was.
Right.
And we were paying for everything in cash. So that also meant we take our envelopes to the store. We bought something that was $35. We only have $30 in our envelope. We need to take some stuff out. So it really helped us. And at the time, it was so funny. We would literally carry these envelopes with us. Mm-hmm. So it was just, we were so adamant about using this system because it was really working for us.
Right.
And then at the end, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead. You finish.
No. So I was saying at the end, if there was any money left over, then we would discuss, okay, so if we have 20, we can just supplement it and just add maybe 80 to that envelope. And yeah, so it helped.
What was it like going from using credit cards to cash? Did you notice a difference, or what was that like?
Yes, there was such a difference. And it's like, it's one that I feel like I didn't really realize it. Mm-hmm. So using... it's so much more painful giving your cash away, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you're paying for things and you're handing over cash, it's like you tend to feel it more because you know that that's the money that you earned. Mm-hmm. Versus paying cards. Sometimes I was guilty of not even looking at the amount that they were charging me, like in the store, and I just swipe. So there really wasn't a personal connection that I was having with my cards, because one, I knew that money was borrowed. And two, it was just like, that money's borrowed. It's not mine. I didn't work for that. I had to work to pay it back, but I'm not really thinking about that right now.
Right.
Versus the cash. It was like, this is literally from our paychecks that this is our money. So I need to figure out, you know, what we're doing with this. And if we don't have enough in the envelope, then we're not buying it.
Right. Did you, during the process of paying your debt off, did you ever think like, is this worth it? Like question or have moments of doubt?
We never really had moments of doubt because we started seeing results. So when we paid off like the first debt, we were like, oh my goodness, this is actually working. And then the next one, and we're like, huh, this is what's happening. So we never had a moment where we're like, oh, like, why are we doing this? Sometimes we would feel, you know, we would feel bad if we had to kind of miss out on certain events because, you know, we made the decision to not attend because of the money situation.
How did you navigate that situation? Like, did you tell that person this is what you were doing?
Depending. So depending on who the person was and what type of relationship we had with them, we would be honest. We would be honest, and we wouldn't really have shame about it. So like, I remember a friend that I had to, I was the bridesmaid for her, and I literally had to tell the other bridesmaids, like, guys, look, I'm paying off my debt. This is the only amount that I can contribute. It was a very low amount. And I apologize. I'm really sorry, but this is what I can do only. Mm-hmm. So
how did she respond?
They were okay with it. They're like, well, I understand, you know, some of us have our limitations. And I'm like, thank you for understanding. Awesome. Most people will understand. Mm. Most people will understand. But nonetheless, it was sometimes uncomfortable, mm-hmm. you know, just it put me in a situation where, like, my pride, I just felt, you know, a little... like my pride was getting hurt a little bit that I couldn't, you know, provide for my friends, or I couldn't really be there for them, or go to an event or a dinner. Right. But it did teach me to advocate and speak up for myself and just say, look, I'm sorry, but I can't be there for you financially at this moment. But it's just for now. Like, I got you. I got you next year.
On your next birthday?
I got you, girl.
So, okay. So now, how many months did it take for you to pay off this debt?
It took us, okay. So we got married in August. Come September, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. It took us about 6.5 months. Wow. Almost 7 months. Yeah.
That's amazing. 6.5 months, you paid off $28,000 in debt.
Yes,
not
girl.
Bad at all.
And then it was so crazy because then quarantine hit as soon as we were done.
Wow.
Paying off our debt. But yeah, we did it. I honestly thought it was going to take us so much longer. Mm-hmm. But we did it in about 7 months.
Mm. Wow. How did it feel once your final, when you paid your last debt payment?
Girl, it felt surreal. Mm. Like it,
I remember you telling me that too.
Yes, yeah. Because we couldn't really, it didn't sink in. It didn't sink in, honestly. It didn't sink in until the following month when we started budgeting and we had all this extra money left over. Mm. And we were like, wait, we really don't have to pay anything? Like,
yeah.
It didn't sink in until then, mm-hmm. but it felt, I know it sounds so cliche, but it really felt like a weight was lifted.
Yeah.
Cause I told, like, it constantly felt like someone was just always looking over my shoulder. Mm-hmm. Like, you owe me this.
Right.
And it felt so liberating. And mm-hmm. we were finally achieving financial freedom and financial stability, and it felt amazing. Yeah. It really did.
What do you tell, like, what would you tell people who might live in cities like New York? You know, you and I both live in New York City, one of the most expensive cities in the world, who feel like maybe this isn't realistic for them. Like, what would you tell those people?
It's all about your mindset. Mm. You think it's not realistic because you haven't tried to do it and you're not being intentional about it. It's possible. You just have to really want it. Mm. And you have to commit to it and make sacrifices to do it. Right. You can find so many ways to save extra money just from analyzing what you're doing with your own money. You have to tell your money where to go, or it's going to control you. You have to have control of it, or it's going to control you. And it's probably going to end up leaving without you, you know, realizing exactly where to categorize it. But there are, even if you just, like, analyze your daily habits, like, do you really need that $7 cup of coffee at Starbucks every single day? Mm-hmm. Do you really need to, you know, go out for lunch? Mm-hmm. Do you really need to go to happy hour every Thursday with your coworkers? So if you start analyzing and you start switching your habits, you can achieve it, because this is all about your spending habits. Mm-hmm. It's not about anything else. It's about your spending habits.
Right.
So not your income, mm-hmm. which I thought.
What do you mean? Make that, can you make that distinction a little bit clearer?
So building wealth is not necessarily about how much you make. It's how much you spend and how much you're saving. Mm. So, you know, your income is your biggest wealth building tool that you have. So no matter if you're making $30,000 a year or if you're making a six-figure salary, these two people, they can both reach financial freedom and they can both build wealth. It just depends on the output. So you have to really just figure out what's eating at your money.
Yeah.
Which categories in your life is taking the most money and adjust that.
So what's the difference you feel as I was going to say 18-year-old Penelope and, you know, Penelope now, but I mean, obviously there's so many differences. It's such a long, like such a big time difference, but like, what's like, what am I trying to say? Like, where are you, like, what's your mindset like now, you know, having gone through this, you know, one of the hardest parts, which is paying off your debt. What is it like going through that, having no debt now? And then what you were like maybe before you got married?
So I definitely feel I feel like much more stable now. So I feel like I have the liberty to make decisions, well, obviously with my husband, but I can make these decisions and not feel guilty about certain things. So before, you know, I was spending, you know, a lot like crazy, not really thinking about it, but I kind of did feel a little bit guilty. Because I knew that someday, whether it was 10 years from now, I had to pay that. So there was always like a little bit of guilt attached to the spending. Now I spend guilt free. Mm-hmm. And it feels awesome. And Chris and I, we took our first vacation debt free and we paid it all cash. Mm-hmm. So it's that same feeling, like we don't have to feel guilty about spending this because we have it. And, and we worked hard to make sure that we are in this, you know, area in our lives where we can actually spend money and not feel guilty about it. So, and it feels really great. So the guilt is definitely out of the spending.
Yeah. What would you like, how would you address people when maybe, like, for example, some people are comfortable carrying debt, you know, they feel like, you know, I think for example, what's common is like student loan. It's just there, you know, they're like, well, I'll pay it off in 20, 30 years. Like what about it is like, what's so important to pay that off, like pay off all your debt now opposed to later?
It's important because you do not want to have this following you around. The interest is going to keep on growing and it becomes a mindset. And then you stay stuck in that mindset of, well, it's just part of the American life of having, you know, all this student loan debt. No, you need to change your mindset. It's not part of the American lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Some people may think it's the norm because they haven't tried to work on it. Student debt, it's a crisis in America right now. Mm-hmm. It's insane when you compare it to other countries. It's disgusting, honestly. Mm-hmm. But if someone feels comfortable with it, you need to be in a situation where you are uncomfortable to get good results. Mm. Right? So like, diamonds are created from pressure. You need to feel uncomfortable to reach something that you really want, a good goal for yourself.
Ooh, so true. So true.
Right? If you're not uncomfortable, you're not doing something right. You should not be comfortable in your life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, for, you know, for me, because like we, so just a little background for anyone who's listening, but you know, you and I, we just happened to grab dinner one night and we found out that we were, okay, so you know what? I realized you did go out during your debt-free part because we got dinner.
Yes. You're right. And wait, yeah. You treated me.
I did treat you.
Okay, you treated me.
Because I was done.
Yes.
Yes, I was done. You were done. And you were like a few months away from paying
off. Yes.
So I was like, let me treat you for dinner.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So that's okay. Hey, that's another benefit of, you know, being debt-free.
Yes. Is
that you can do that for your friends.
Right.
So we're out at dinner and, you know, we both realized that we were going through the same program.
And didn't even know.
We didn't even know. And we literally had like a 3-hour, no joke, like 3-4 hours just talking about finances. And we talked about the process. We talked about, you know, the things that have changed, how we've changed. And, you know, to your point about like, you need to feel that pressure and uncomfortability for you to want to change. And I think that's something I've learned as well, that you really can't, you can't put the motivation in somebody. Like it has to come from within, because when I was like 25, I didn't like just come across Dave Ramsey on YouTube. I went through his entire course of Financial Peace University.
Oh my goodness.
And
yes.
Went in one ear and out the other. And out I agreed. I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. This is great. But you know what? I didn't do anything about it. I was living my best life. And it wasn't until I hit 30 and I found myself back home with my parents and I didn't have a job. I think at that point I was $20,000 in debt, but like it was climbing because obviously I didn't have a job, but I was like still spending my money. And I just realized at that point, I was like, I just literally was like, what the hell am I doing? And same thing, because I took that class, I knew of Dave Ramsey. So I went back on YouTube and looked up his stuff and the debt-free screams. Tell you how many of those I listened to, and it makes me cry listening to those debt-free screams, because you hear the
passion
and the passion and just like all of that emotion and energy. It and then they scream, like it's just like scream of relief, like man. But anyways, so I just wanted to say to your point, like, yeah, it really does take your own uncomfortability for you to make a change. Like I could tell you it's all blue in the face that this is what you need to do, or this is what's beneficial for you, but it's not until, you know, you want to
change
yourself.
Right. And it's like exactly what you said. It comes from within you. Mm-hmm. It's just one day something just clicks. Mm-hmm. It really does.
What would you tell somebody who, you know, who's like us, young working professionals, like how would you encourage them to get started if they don't know how or where to go, or, you know, and because some people, you know, might think, oh, 24, 25,000, 28,000, that's not that much. Some people are saddled with like hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debts or consumer debt, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. If someone might feel overwhelmed on where to start, how would you encourage them?
Definitely, I would encourage them to start listening to financial podcasts. So, you know, we listen to Dave Ramsey, but there's a plethora of other options that they can listen to. But I obviously will be recommending Dave because that's what we used and we followed it and it was successful for us. Mm-hmm. So I would never recommend something that I didn't know. Listen to them, really pay attention to their stories and the advice that they're giving, that these, you know, it's free advice and it is insane how much impact it's going to have on your finances. Also, really sit down and think about why you want to be debt-free and what endless possibilities you can have if you weren't paying a whole chunk of your paycheck to debt. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's you want to help a family member, or, you know, maybe you want to build a house, mm-hmm. but really just think about why you want to and make that your motivator. Mm-hmm. But like we were saying, it needs to really come from them. They need mm-hmm. to really, really, really be, I probably said this word 10 times, but intentional. They have to want to get to that goal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not impossible, because you will find stories of people that paid six figures down. Yeah. So if you're in a situation where you have six figure debt, search for it on YouTube and get motivated by people that are in a similar, or that were in a similar situation than mm-hmm. yours, because that's your proof that it's possible.
Right. There is a really memorable debt-free scream of this woman. I think she was like in, I want to say like $60,000 in debt. But she was only making like 30. I'm messing up these numbers, but she was like $60,000 in debt, maybe making $30,000. And she paid that off in like a year and a half or 2 years. And the reason why she was able to do that was because she took on another job. And then once she paid it off, she like kept that second job. And she's like, cause I'm trying to now save up for like a house. And I was like, yes. Oh my gosh, it was so inspiring. I mean, even now, like during this pandemic, I'm like, what's another job I can get right now or do right now, you know, while, you know, just to have a little bit of extra cash, you know?
Right. That's key.
Yeah. The side hustle. Because for me too, when I paid off my debt too, having an extra job was instrumental. Like it yes. took that extra income to be able to pay down my debt in that short period of time. Did you have a side hustle when you were
paying? I did.
What was your side hustle?
I did. So I was doing private sessions. For like the hearing services that I mm-hmm. provide mm-hmm. during the day, I was doing private ones, mm-hmm. Which helped tremendously. Like it was an insane help.
Mm-hmm. Were you gonna say tremendously and immense at the same time?
Yes. Did you see that? I'm like, tremendous. That's not a word. Oh my goodness. But it helped so much. It was like bringing in an extra like $1,000 a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or are you still doing that now?
I am. Wow. I am still doing it now.
And
I enjoy it. Girl, so I got into couponing when we got married, and I am still, it's a little difficult now because of the pandemic, but before the pandemic, you know, my couponing, I was crazy. I was like, it gives me just a rush, and I tried to beat myself the next time. And like, can I get my out of pocket expense lower than this? And couponing is highly recommended, especially if you're trying to get out of debt and side hustle. So I had that second job. I was doing the private sessions, and then I was also doing more partnerships with curl companies, you know, a couple hundred here and there add up. Wow. We could just, you know, throw it towards our debt. But there's side hustles available for people.
What are some other side hustles you're doing right now? And I'm asking you, cause I know you have another one that you just told me about.
Yes. So another side hustle. So the one I'm doing right now are focus groups. So these are a moneymaker deal. Yeah. If you qualify for it, moneymakers. So you go on a website and you create a profile, and they will email you different surveys. So you take the surveys, and if you meet the criteria for the focus group that they're looking for, you're in the focus group. Some of them pay up to $600.
What?
Some are some are 200. Some are a quick 50 bucks.
Wait a minute. What's the website again?
So it's, did I not text it to you?
You did. Hold on. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go on this. Oh, okay.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Yes.
Well, I'll put the link in the podcast notes. So if anyone else is interested, Schlesinger Group, qualitative and quantitative research services.
Yes. And because, you know, it's a pandemic, a lot of these focus groups are just through Zoom or sometimes.
Oh, you have to attend.
Oh, yes. You have to attend.
Oh.
Right. Because, and or sometimes they'll send you a product to try. You test it, you give. They want your opinion on things. So, yes, you know, it's going to take time, but. You're at home 30 minutes. You're set aside for to complete one part of the focus group. You're done. Sometimes it's only an interview. So like you set up a meeting with them and they just want to interview you for 1 hour and they present, you know, whatever topic it is, you give your opinion on it and you get money sent to your PayPal.
Wow.
Yeah. Awesome. So it's been nice. Getting, you know, you're obviously, you're not going to be like waiting for the money, but it's like a nice surprise when you're like, oh, I got chosen for this focus group. That's an extra $100.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. I mean, it adds up. I think, did you say at 1 month you made $1,000 from the focus?
Yes. Group? In the month of November, I made $1,000 in the focus groups.
That's amazing.
Yep. How many did I do? I did like 7 or 8. Of them.
From your home though. Like,
yeah.
That's not bad at all.
Some of them required you to be very active. And like I said, some of them were just like a quick 1 hour interview and that was like $100 for that hour.
What do you mean by be active?
So for one of them, they created an app. Mm-hmm. It was geared towards fitness. Mm-hmm. So I had to join the app along with other women. And it was really good. I'm kind of sad that I don't have it anymore. But it was a community where you can just go on and discuss your fitness habits, eating habits, and you encourage each other. Mm-hmm. So they really wanted you to be active on that app. And then at the end of the week, they would ask you questions about your experience on the app. So that was a month long. So every week, almost every day, they wanted us to log in and talk to each other. So it didn't feel tedious. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had to actively participate and engage with others.
Right. I see. So what are you doing now that you have all this extra cash that's not going to your debt? Where is your money going now?
So now we are saving for our house. Ooh. And I have the sheet over there. We just shaded in because we saved 15% so far of our down payment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it's like, I have to show it to you.
I think I just need to put these podcasts on video. There's so many moments where I'm like, I wish it was on video. A, to show my jaw drop and this poster that you have.
Oh, lies. It wasn't 15%. It was actually 25%.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. 25% we've saved so far.
Wait, and you obviously- 25%?
Yes, we've saved 25%
of a down for like so a down payment. So you're more than the conventional 20% right now then.
No.
Oh, 25% of your down payment.
Down payment.
Gotcha.
Not as the down payment.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, no, gotcha. No. That's so great though. I mean,
yeah,
you're out of debt. You have your 3 to 6 months. So, you know, I know we kind of skipped over that a little bit, but once your debt is paid off, the next step is to have 3 to 6 months of your expenses saved up. And that's just money you just don't touch. That's literally just for emergencies.
Right.
And now you've saved almost a quarter. I mean, you've saved a quarter of your down payment.
Amount, yes.
Wow.
So exciting. We shaded it in November 29th. So now we have our next goal, which is 50% of our down payment amount. So that should be exciting. But now we can kind of start it's no longer like a dream. Now it's literally, we're literally working for this. And
oh my gosh,
we have a date. So hopefully by 2022, we can start, you know, house hunting.
Wow.
So it has become a reality more than a dream. And it feels awesome.
Oh my gosh.
That's like surreal.
Yeah. I mean, again, I just have to reiterate, this is New York City. Like it's not impossible. It's very much possible. And now you're looking to buy a home, buying right. property in New York City.
Right.
New York City, the surrounding areas, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Long area. Island, wherever you go.
No, but still, yeah.
But still, super expensive. Either way, Long Island, New Jersey, still expensive, you know, compared to other states.
I mean, forget about that. Like, just the fact that you're making your dream a reality right now. You're buying that home you've always dreamed of, and it's happening mm-hmm. so soon.
Right. And this is our motivator. You know, we have this in our room. So every time we, you know, we walk by, we see this. And
where did you get that?
So I printed this out on the Dave Ramsey website.
Can you send it to me?
Yes. Actually, his daughter was the one that created this PDF, Rachel Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Down Payment Milestones. And you just shade it in as you go through your milestones.
Wow.
So 25%, and they write cute little things on the side. So once you save 25%, it says start dreaming, order a fancy beverage from your local coffee shop, and drive through your favorite neighborhoods.
Oh, just cute.
It's really cute. So each milestone has like a little description of for you to get inspired.
Aww, I love it. All right. I'm going to have to share that on Instagram too.
Yes. It's really good.
So
it's a visual.
Last question. What would you tell your younger self?
I would tell my younger self that you are going to be okay. You're going to be okay. There's going to be, you know, some difficult situations that you're going to go through in life financially, but you have ambition and you're resilient. So you're going to be just fine. Just focus on your goal, on what you want in your life, what you want to achieve, you know, financially, but don't take the mistakes as regrets, because you will learn from them.
That is so good. Don't take your mistakes as regrets. Ooh, that is so good. Oh my gosh.
Penelope. I don't know. You just bring these like out of me.
You're 30, you're debt free, you're wise now. I mean, it's just
a little wiser. Thank you.